Welcome to All Sides with Anna Staver. If you're a parent, you probably are well aware how expensive it is to put one, two, even three kids in daycare. It can cost more than your mortgage, and it usually does. And that's also if you're lucky enough to snag a spot in the child care center of your choice. The best places have long waiting lists. It's a crisis here in Ohio, and it doesn't just affect parents. Ohio's Chamber of Commerce says businesses are losing talented employees, young families are relocating, and perhaps most importantly, many of our children aren't being prepared for kindergarten. All right, now that I've thoroughly depressed you, I'm going to introduce Policy Matters Ohio budget and health researcher Catherine Poe. Poe co-authored the group's recent report on the child care crisis here in Ohio. Welcome to All Sides.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
So let's start with the numbers so people know what we're talking about in terms of cost. Because I think if you don't have kids, they can be pretty stunning. So what does it cost to put one baby in one daycare here in Ohio?
So I think that for me, as someone who also doesn't have kids, learning about the cost of childcare was what really blew my mind while doing this report. So we know that on average, the average Ohioan pays around $800 a month for childcare per child. We know that average costs really depend on age for a child. So when you're talking about an infant, it can really be anywhere from $8,000 to $10,000 a year. And then for toddlers, it can be anywhere from about $8,000 to $9,000 a year. And so what you're really talking about is you're talking about a huge percentage of people's salaries, particularly if you have more than one child.
Yeah, so the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services says that a family of three with two parents and an infant need to make about $138,000 a year to not be burdened by their childcare.
Yeah. Yeah, and something that my co-author, Allie Smith, and I found out was that you have to make about $250,000 a year to hit that 7% benchmark with an infant and a toddler. So you can see that that cost just continues to go up the more kids that you have.
But there is some help for Ohio's lowest wage workers, right? The state subsidizes for low-income families.
We do. So Ohio, like many states, has a child care assistance program. But unfortunately, Ohio's publicly funded child care is the lowest eligibility rate in the entire country for kids 0 to 5.
So we're the bottom of the pile.
Yeah. Way, way down at the bottom, which does not feel good for anyone, especially for Ohio families.
Yeah, and we talk a lot about percentages, but I think 146% of federal poverty is where we're at. And so for a family of four, I think that's under $45,000 a year.
Yeah, yeah. So we're really only talking about our poorest Ohioans, which, as you know, that doesn't really work out because people who are in the middle class now have to treat Ohio childcare as a luxury when it's really a pillar of so many families' lives. And so that really, really low eligibility rate locks a lot of people out of getting that assistance.
Yeah, because if you're making $45,000 a year as a family of four, then what we're talking, or even $50,000, we're talking $20,000 of that $50,000 going to childcare. And that's not your rent, that's not your cars or your mortgage or your school debt. That's like $20,000 going to childcare.
Yeah. And
so
like,
you're probably not doing it. You're probably a parent staying home or you're working alternating shifts.
Yeah. Well, and it's just so painful to even think about. Like, so I'm an older Gen Z and I feel like I'm at that point in my life where my friends are talking about like what it would be like for them to have kids. And it's the thing that always comes up. Like, can we even afford to like safely give our child care? I don't think that people realize how much mental space this one issue takes up in the minds of young professionals who are trying to start a family.
I think you can see it in the birth rates because like we are having far, far fewer kids than we used to. And not only are we having fewer kids, we're having them much later in life.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, in terms of often we see families having to have at least one parent or now two parents in the workforce, right? And so when you're thinking about like a dual household income, you're basically choosing between having one parent go to work and one parent stay home and take care of your kids. instead of having a dual household income. Like, often parents are choosing between just going to work or just not entering the workforce. And so it's a really terrible place for a lot of families to be in terms of, like, you could make so much more money, but all of that money is going to go to childcare. So is it even worth it?
Yeah, I want to bring in a dad from Powell. So his name is Elijah Derry, and he's got three kids with his wife. And when they all needed daycare, like that period of time where they were all under 5 years old, they paid $46,000 a year for childcare. And I want to say a quick note before we hear from Elijah. He works in construction. And when we spoke to each other, he was in the cab of his excavator taking a quick break.
Yeah, and we talked about, you know, my wife staying home with the kids, but, you know, she worked really hard to, you know, get through dental hygiene school. And, you know, luckily we both have good paying jobs that it didn't really make sense to give the career up to do that, because we were able to afford it. Not that we wanted to afford, you know, pay that much at all. Kept us from doing other things we would have liked to do, but yeah, it's ridiculous.
But as big of a hit as $46,000 a year is, Elijah knows he's one of the lucky ones. He and his wife can afford daycare they feel comfortable with, even if it's a big financial burden. Some of his other friends don't have that option.
Like I said, I have a couple friends that have, like, done completely switched their lives around and took on careers that they could, you know, relearn or learn from home just to be able to stay home with their kids or get them on the bus. Or if they're younger, you know, I got a couple buddies who, him or his wife works nights and the other one works the days just so that they don't have to send them to daycare. I know my brother and his wife, they live in Kentucky, and she was a nurse and gave up her career to be able to stay home with the kids because they did not want to be paying, the daycare costs.
And, you know, so that was Elijah Derry talking about all the different options that parents have. But here's the thing, Catherine. Daycare workers aren't driving around in Mercedes. Like, they earn, on average, here in the state of Ohio, they earn $13 an hour.
Yeah, yeah. And so I think, you know, one of the things we really tried to think about when we were writing our report is the impact of our current crisis on workers. And it's really, really evident that, like, workers and childcare are just not okay. There was a 35% reduction in our childcare workforce from 2017 to 2022 that you can really, really see in the industry. And it's not surprising because people are making wages that they themselves can't even wage. They can't raise their own families on. And that's really an issue. Childcare workers often don't have benefits. And with these low salaries on top of that, with this really emotionally and physically demanding work, it just doesn't make it a sustainable career for someone in the long term. And so they're just not able to stay around.
Yeah, a lot of them, I would think, you know, you can earn more money in an Amazon warehouse than you can as a childcare worker.
Oh, yeah. I mean, my wife is a coffee barista, and she makes more money than these childcare workers do.
Oh, my goodness. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought about that. I was like, $13 an hour is like what we pay the interns here at WOSU.
Yeah, like, that's no wage to be, like, purposefully and intentionally taking care of our kiddos. And our littlest Ohioans deserve people who are going to be there and present and consistent with them. And that can't happen if providers aren't able to even just take care of themselves and their families.
Yeah, ironically, a lot of them have to leave when they get pregnant because they can't afford the daycare.
Mm-hmm.
I also want to ask you about childcare deserts, because almost 40% of Ohioans live in a childcare desert. So, first of all, what is a childcare desert?
So, a childcare desert, much like a food desert, is an area where there's just no childcare availability. And that can mean, you know, you don't have publicly available childcare options who are in that assistance program, or there are just no providers in general. Often it's a lack of home care providers or a lack of centers, or really even both.
So does that at all apply to, like, the waiting lists? Because sometimes, you know, I am a mom of two children, and the advice is the moment that stick turns pink, the moment you get those two double lines, get on a daycare waiting list.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, we really know that a lot of Ohioans struggle to even place their children in a place that's good for them. So my favorite statistic from this report is that the Columbus metropolitan area has about 18% of Ohio's population, and all 32 counties of Appalachia have about 17%. And yet there are 100 less childcare centers in Appalachia than there are in Franklin County. And so that tells us that if you are in the rural areas, and in particular, if you're in Appalachia, you are going to have a really hard time finding the right place for your kiddo. And so it really varies by region. It varies by the style and the type of childcare you're looking for. A lot of parents want either a home care experience for their child, or they want a center experience. It's not the same for everyone. And so getting the right place for your child is also important. And it just makes it really hard. And then you end up with these really long waiting lists that can be so confusing and exhausting for parents, because that's so stressful to not know where your child is going until the last minute when you finally get in somewhere.
Yeah, when you're touring a childcare center and they're like, well, we have an 18-month waiting list. And you're like, cool, cool. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, I just, you know, I recently had a friend who just had a baby a couple of weeks ago, and she was touring like 6 months into her pregnancy and earlier. And that's really what it takes. It's so stressful for our new moms. Do we really think that they should have to be worrying about that? No, absolutely not.
So what do we do to solve all of this? Like, what can state lawmakers do right now to make childcare more manageable? Because Ohio doesn't even mandate all-day kindergarten. So for those who don't know, like, you don't have to legally, as a public school, do all-day kindergarten.
Yeah, so the thing that I have really come to is that childcare is mostly a funding issue in our state. You see other comparable states like New Mexico, Maine, even Tennessee and Kentucky, some more conservative states. And what they've done is they've set aside specific general revenue tax dollars for childcare, and they have made a consistent and continued investment. And they've put a lot of money into these systems, and that's often why they're successful. So for state lawmakers, if you're listening, fund childcare. That is the primary thing that you can do. You can increase that amount that taxpayers are putting into it.
But increase the income eligibility for lower income Ohioans.
Mm-hmm. So you can also, you know, make that income eligibility higher, putting it at somewhere around 300% of the federal poverty line would actually ensure that the majority of Ohioans get access to that. And then lastly, you can increase reimbursement rates, which is essentially the amount that the state pays to providers for their care in the publicly funded system. Increasing those rates mean that providers get a living wage, which is what they deserve. And so I think you know, all of those three things combined would really help stabilize our crisis in Ohio.
And I'm glad you mentioned reimbursement rates, because sometimes they are below what a daycare says it needs to operate, which means those without the subsidy pay more to cover those costs.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, again, childcare is really hard. It's really emotional work. And the least our state government can do is ensure that the people that are doing that work are paid a living wage so that they can continue to do the work that they love, which is taking care of our kids.
I want to ask, have you ever heard of the Lantham Act?
No.
Okay. So this is kind of a crazy story.
Okay.
And I'm so excited I get to tell it. So during World War II, the federal government needed women to work, right? The whole Rosie the Riveter era. Mm-hmm. But women, a lot of times, were home with the children. So the Lantham Act of the federal government created federally funded child care centers in 1940. And they were subsidized for all children, regardless of family income. And they had, like, architects design them, child psychologists. There were doctors and nurses involved. But the real kicker for me in researching for this episode was that some of these centers cooked meals, like whole dinners, for women to pick up with their children so they wouldn't have to cook when they got home. And we all paid for it because it was critical to national security.
Wow.
I know, the dinner thing made me really salty. I was like, where is my homemade meal?
That's crazy. Yeah. And it really goes to show, like, childcare is infrastructure. We've always known this. It's a pillar to actually having a successful workforce. And clearly, this is something the federal government, as well as states, have known for a very, very long time. So why did we get rid of it?
Because they wanted the women to go back home so that all of the GIs would have jobs when they came back.
And that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, so for once upon a time, we had sort of the utopia of federally funded childcare centers.
Could you even imagine?
Oh, my gosh. If someone, was lovingly taking care of my children, these college-educated people in these, beautifully designed centers, and then they gave me a hot meal to take home, I'd be like, dude, I'm never leaving. This is, perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. And, we know that women re-entering the workforce after COVID has been tough. Right. And so many moms had to stay at home with their kids during COVID. That childcare always very, very consistently. Now, this is changing statistically, but we know that moms often bear the brunt of that on their careers. And so having those kinds of supports means that you can get more people into the workforce. It's a gender equity issue, but it also just means that you have more workers, which is ideally what Ohio would want in this situation.
That was Catherine Poe from the Ohio, from Policy Matters, Ohio. They're a budget research and health budget, and I cannot get this out. Okay, let me start over again. That was Catherine Poe, Policy Matters, Ohio budget and health researcher. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you for having me.
We got there eventually. I am sorry about that. Coming up, we're looking at the childcare crisis from a hiring manager's perspective with the Ohio Chamber of Commerce. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Anna Staver. We're talking about childcare this hour, how it's becoming both unaffordable and hard to find for many Ohio families. But the impacts of childcare shortages aren't contained to families with children. It also impacts business, because when parents can't find daycare, one of them usually ends up leaving the workforce. Joining me now is Ohio Chamber of Commerce President Steve Stivers. Thanks for joining us today.
It's great to be with you, Anna. Thank you.
I want to start with this statistic that I've heard you share before, because I think it's a perfect indicator of how childcare impacts the workforce. And it's that 70% of non-working and part-time working moms say they'd return full-time if childcare was affordable.
And that means we'd have more people in the workforce. And you know, Ohio's workforce participation is still almost a full point below the national average. And in Ohio, people spend an average of about 103% of their rent on childcare. So childcare is more expensive than having a house or an apartment. That is astounding and troubling all at the same time. And that's why the Chamber of Commerce has really leaned in on childcare. You know, when I came to the chamber 2.5 years ago, I did not expect to be talking about housing and childcare, but because workforce is the number one issue and there are determinants of workforce that include housing, transportation, and childcare, we're talking about those issues now and trying to make them better. And, there are different solutions for different areas, but it's pretty clear we need to make childcare more accessible and more affordable.
Yeah, especially if you have multiple kids, very quickly it starts to cost more to put them in daycare than you get paid. And that's usually when, it's usually the mom drops out of the workforce.
That's right. You know, an infant costs about $11,000 on average in Ohio. And for a toddler, it's about $10,500. And for a preschooler, about $9,000. So, you know, if you have two infants or two infants and a toddler, you know, all of a sudden you're talking about post-tax money. If you have an infant, a toddler, and a preschooler, you're talking about $30,000 of after-tax money, which means you've got to make, you know, $50,000 to generate the $30,000. So your salary is going to have to be pretty high if you've got three kids in childcare in order to continue in the workforce and have it make sense.
So Intel is building a daycare at its Lincoln County site. And I know other big businesses, Ohio State, different universities do the same thing. But what about smaller businesses? Because they can't afford to build their own daycare, and sometimes they can't afford to give subsidies.
That is where we see the biggest impact is on small business. And in rural communities, Anna. So, you know, in Columbus and, you know, decent-sized cities, you can have a childcare center that has a bunch of staff and watches a bunch of kids. In 80 of our 88 counties, the solution is going to be home-based childcare, where we have to make entrepreneurship and people willing to open their home to childcare affordable and make it make sense for them. So we've got to look at those issues for the rural counties, and we've got to figure out how to help the big childcare centers with workforce, subsidizing some things, and helping parents be able to afford the childcare rates that are charged.
And childcare centers have staffing issues too. Like, one of the most ironic ones, I think, is that when childcare centers, like when their employees become parents, they often can't afford the care at the facility where they work.
Yeah, that's something that we're working to see if we can create programs that create scholarships for their kids to allow them to continue to work when they're parents. And that's ironic that a parent that works in a childcare center, because the average wage is so low, immediately can't afford to work because, childcare costs as much as they're bringing home, or sometimes more.
Didn't the governor try to do that in his last budget?
He proposed it. The legislature did cut that out. We are advocates for continuing to move toward that type of situation where there are sponsored spots for daycare workers, for, you know, first responders and a few other folks that are really important career fields.
Yeah, because I think the average daycare worker in Ohio, I think it averages to like a little over $13 per hour. And part of me is like, that's what we pay the interns here.
And that was, by the way, Anna, that's up from a couple of years ago when it was 11. So that's after some money was put in to increase wages. So, you know, we'd like to see wages go up. But as you make wages go up, unless you do something else, you're causing the parents to pay even more than the numbers we just talked about. So we think that that's important.
I want to bring Autumn Williams into our conversation. She's the mom of a little boy down in Dayton, and she gets help from the state to pay for her childcare.
The facility that he's at, they take such great care of him, and he's learning so much at a young age. He's knowing math and science and learning how to read all at a younger age.
So you feel like you can trust the people taking care of him?
Yes.
How important is that as a working mom?
It's really important, especially when you have to leave your child with a person that you don't know for people that you don't know for long periods of time, and you can't call and always check up on them.
But if she gets a raise, she could lose her eligibility for that subsidy. It's called a benefit cliff. And for Autumn, it could mean giving up the preschool that she and her son have come to love.
It kind of makes it hard to want to progress, but it's one of those things that you have to do better for your family. So you would have to take the promotion. Like, I would take the promotion, and I would probably no longer accept childcare just because it would be so much.
Autumn said she'd rely on family members for childcare. And while they would love him and care for him, it wouldn't be the same kind of preparation for kindergarten that he's currently getting in his current facility.
And it's hard because, like you say, you want your child to get that education, and it's not like they're not getting it at home, but it's not the same education that they could be getting there. And then it's kind of a domino effect. So then it creates the issue of them going to school, them not being prepared, and then being held back, and then behaviors. It's it trickles down at the end of the day.
And, you know, I think Autumn's story is not unique, and the benefit cliff is nothing new. But, Steve, what should the state of Ohio be doing to help? Because I think it's awful to think, do I want the raise or do I want the childcare?
Yeah, and the benefit cliff is not just in childcare. It's in housing subsidies. It's in Medicaid. And it's something we've been working. It's one of our top 10 priorities to try to fix the benefit cliff. It results in people not taking raises, not getting promotions, becoming stagnant in their careers, or taking the raise and losing more than their raise in benefits. What we'd like to see, you know, instead of a cliff, think about jumping off a cliff, is making it like a stair step where the more you make, the more you provide toward your benefits, but they're still subsidized. So think of that like more like stair steps instead of a giant cliff. We think that will encourage people to take the raise, get the promotion, move their social station in life, and eventually, when you go up those stairs far enough, you don't need the subsidy anymore, assuming you can get that far. But that would be a much preferable system to the cliff we have today, where everything drops off if you're a penny over a certain dollar amount.
And speaking of that dollar amount, Governor DeWine is asking lawmakers again to raise the eligibility for that state subsidized child care. He wants to raise it to about 200% of federal poverty, which is about $60,000 for a family of four. And I mean, that's more than we get now. But Policy Matters Ohio, who we just heard from earlier in the show, says a family here in Central Ohio needs $140,000 per year if they want to comfortably afford that daycare. So there's a big gap between $60,000 and $140,000.
There is, but I will say I come from the Woody Hayes School of Policy, which is take 3 yards in a cloud of dust. Let's make progress. Let's move the right direction. And, you know, that commitment by Governor DeWine that he announced in the State of the State a few weeks ago goes together with his commitment where he said he wants to add a voucher program for 8,000 Ohio kids, the kind of thing I just talked about, that will get them access to childcare. That'd be another $85 million. So the good news is we see the state being willing, and certainly the governor, willing to make investment in making childcare more accessible and more affordable. And while Policy Matters might have the right number, might have the wrong number, and I would love to get to that number, I think what we should aspire to is move forward with 3 yards in a cloud of dust every time we have an opportunity and get closer to the ideal. You know, we can't just snap our fingers and move straight to the perfect world. We need to improve our world every day, and that's what Governor DeWine's proposal would do, and we're 100% behind it because it'll help the workforce, which makes Ohio businesses more competitive.
Where do you guys come down on mandatory, like, we don't even have mandatory all-day kindergarten in the state of Ohio, let alone, you know, preschool for four-year-olds?
So we think that early child learning is important. We think that it should be as available and accessible as it can. We would support, you know, kindergarten, full-day kindergarten.
Yeah, we got to get there first
let's start there.
Get to preschool.
I mean, let's start there and move down to preschool. You know, it's important, and I think we're moving that direction. But preschool helps with kindergarten readiness, and we see, and you know, the mom you spoke to spoke
to it.
That's
that push and pull, Autumn.
Literally,
yeah.
Autumn's talked about it affects kindergarten readiness if you don't have any educational curriculum in preschool, and we send too many kids, about a third, to kindergarten that are not kindergarten ready. And they get further behind by the time they hit third grade. They're more likely to drop out of school. It not being kindergarten ready has a profound effect, not just on their kindergarten year, but their entire lives. So all this stuff is important, and we need to work to move it together. But I think starting with moving the poverty level, the 200% of the federal poverty level for child care assistance, is a great starting point. And, you know, that's a big jump. And we've increased the federal poverty level for childcare twice. It went from 130 to 142% in 21. It went from 100 to 145% in 2023. So again, now we'll jump to 200%. So that shows we're continuing to try to make that kind of progress. And, you know, that's just in the last couple of years, starting in 21. So
it takes time.
We can't get there all at once, but we're an advocate for moving as fast as we can afford.
You know, I think the cost of childcare has another impact on businesses, because when your childcare eats up 10%, 20%, let's say even 30% of your take-home pay, you don't have money for life's little luxuries. Like, you're not getting your nails done. You're not going out on dates to dinner at restaurants. Like, so many other services in the community drop off because all your money is going to childcare. And I want to tell you this crazy story. So we heard from Elijah Derry earlier in this hour, and he has three kids, lives here in Central Ohio, and at the peak, they were spending more than $40,000 a year on childcare for their three kids.
Wow.
$40,000 a year. And he makes good money. Like, him and his wife make a combined six figures. But they still spent a month without a functioning oven because they had to save up for a replacement oven. So he's like, we used the air fryer and we made do. And it's so wild to me because you think that was the dream. You grow up, you get an education, you make a combined six figures. You should be well off. But, like, vacations are a struggle. Buying an oven is a struggle.
Yeah, it's really expensive. And, you know, a combined $40,000 is probably more than their mortgage, like I talked about earlier.
It's like triple their mortgage, you said.
That is a giant number. And when you make, you know, even if you make six figures, you know, $40,000 is 40% of your income if you're at 100. That's a giant number.
It's a giant chunk of change.
It takes away a lot of opportunity that they could go on a vacation, buy an oven, upgrade their car. You know, it takes away choices from them. That's why we need to work to make childcare, even unsubsidized childcare, for somebody that's, you know, $100,000, that's, you know, more like 400% of the poverty level. They're certainly middle class, but when you take 40% of their money, that's a giant chunk of change. So we've got to figure out how to make even unsubsidized childcare more affordable. And we think part of that is, again, that entrepreneurship. We've worked with Wonder Schools that has helped really grow entrepreneurs all around the country. They've helped create 40,000 childcare programs, not slots, 40,000 programs across the country by creating entrepreneurs that create childcare, home-based childcare centers in their home. And we think that is part of the answer. And we think, you know, Michigan launched a program with Wonder Schools and created 75 programs in targeted communities that were childcare deserts. A childcare desert is defined as a community that has 50 or more children of childcare age and no access to childcare. So, unfortunately, in Ohio, we have childcare deserts in most of our rural communities and some of our inner cities.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, any new parent knows how long the waiting list can be for quality care. Oftentimes, you have to be on them before you're even pregnant, which is bananas.
Yeah. We have one of our senior vice presidents at the chamber, Justin Zink, and his wife, you know, went on a waiting list for a childcare spot last year. They just became pregnant earlier this year with their second child. So it's and they already had a child in daycare, in childcare. So it's you've got to get ahead of it if you want to get to one of the better childcare centers. And that's because there's a shortage, and it's a issue for people no matter how much they make. And he and his wife do very well, but, you know, if they wouldn't have had the forethought to apply
before they were pregnant,
one of them might have had to take a longer leave of absence or maybe even leave the workforce.
That was Steve Stivers, president of the Ohio Chamber of Commerce. Thank you so much for your time today.
It was great to be with you.
Coming up, we're hearing from state lawmakers on what they plan to do, or maybe not do, when it comes to solving the childcare crisis. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Anna Staver. We're talking about childcare this hour, why it's so expensive, and what, if anything, our lawmakers should be doing to bring those costs down. Republican State Senator Andrew Brenner is one of those state lawmakers. He chairs the Senate's Education Committee and has been part of the push to change how we teach children to read. Oh, welcome back to All Sides, Senator.
Well, thank you very much for having me back on.
I want to start with kindergarten, actually, because Ohio doesn't mandate public schools provide all-day kindergarten. And so before we even talk about any kind of mandate for preschool, we probably should start with kindergarten.
Mm-hmm.
What would it cost to just mandate all-day kindergarten?
I would guess it's in the hundreds of millions of dollars. Right now, we have approximately 118,000 kids this school year, and that includes private sector kids who are in private schools in kindergarten. And you're looking at probably about at least half of that are half school, half day, not full day. And school districts that have gone full day, and I think even Olentangy's done this, they've had to go back because of overcrowding in some schools and other issues. So they've essentially gone to half day kindergarten. And I think that's something the local districts use as a flexibility when they have enrollment problems or they've got not enough space. So I think that's part of the reason why that hasn't changed since I've been in the General Assembly, at least.
Yeah, and so then the cost of adding a year of mandatory preschool for four-year-olds is many times that factor for just adding kindergarten.
Yeah, especially if you take a look at the eligibility, the numbers which I have in front of me, we have 137,000 kids last year were confirmed with the Department of Children and Youth this morning were in preschools. And early childhood education, approximately 29,000. We added several million to this program to add more kids to it, because I know one of your prior guests was talking about the fact that the state hasn't increased the percentage of poverty
incomes,
level,
yeah.
Yes, from 145%. I know some of the surrounding states, we might consider, looking at something that is similar to what some of the surrounding states are doing, such as Kentucky and Pennsylvania and so forth. But they're not at 200%, which is, I think, where the governor wanted, but they're at around 175% of the poverty level. Now, that alone will increase the costs by several hundred million dollars as well to the state budget. So you've got to have that money available, though, and make sure it's budgeted because ours is a biennial budget, so you have to have enough for the two-year period and know that you have it available. And we just had to add to House Bill 250 just a couple weeks ago an additional $19 million to cover the cost of the foster care and the adoption program, because we did actually add some subsidies for that, and the money ran out. I mean, it was utilized quickly, so we added about $19 million, I think, per year to that program alone.
Yeah, when we're talking about percentages of poverty level, like, sometimes it's a little hard to wrap your head around what that means. So right now, if you earn more than $43,500 as a family of four, you don't qualify for the subsidy. The governor wants to raise that to about $60,000 for a family of four. So it would, moving from 43 to 60,000, it's about $16,500. So that would add more families onto the rolls for eligibility, which is where you get that couple hundred mm-hmm. million dollars to cover it. But I did want to talk about a creative way maybe to bring down the cost of childcare. So in Texas, they passed a constitutional amendment last November to give property tax exemptions to child care centers, kind of similar to what you get like at a church or a place of worship.
I would be open to that. I think that the Republican caucus would be open to something similar to that, because what you're doing is you're reducing the cost to that child care center, so then they would have more money freed up to be able to pay more money for their employees. And in order to retain those employees, which I know your prior guests discussed, you're going to have more money from something. So in order to, you know, make more of a supply available, I think that would be something that I think we would be open to.
And I want to talk about the kind of care that people get, right? Because we've been talking a little bit about whether you do an in-center, like a daycare facility, or an in-home, mm-hmm. where you go to somebody's house. And the thing that gets in the way of all of this is something called Step Up to Quality. And that's mm-hmm. Ohio's system for ranking basically like the educational value of a daycare. And it's been in the crosshairs on and off for the last couple of years because you have to have a single star to take state aid, and then that was moving up to 3 stars to take state aid. And there were some in-home daycares that just said, you know what, I'm not taking subsidized kids anymore.
That happened. In fact, we put in the budget to expand it so that you could have more in-home childcare available. The cost to go to that third star, in just from a bureaucratic standpoint, was so substantially increased. The people just were like, hey, we can't, it'll take too long to fill out all this paperwork, costs us money to fill out this paperwork.
There's also certain education requirements, so if you don't have it, you don't have it.
Bachelor's degrees, master's degrees, which there's just no way you can hire the people and be able to pay them the amount that the market right now is willing to bear for childcare and early childcare. So we decided to expand it so that you could have more in-home type of abilities. And I've talked to Greg Lawson of the Buckeye Institute about the pods for kids for learning in K-12. You could possibly do something there where you're subsidizing it for smaller groups of people, and maybe parents can take turns during the week at being able to take care of the group of kids in their, you know, local community or, you know, cul-de-sac.
Like a co-op.
Yeah, like a co-op.
Like a different version of a nanny share, kind of.
In a way, yes.
Oh, that's an interesting idea. Like, you have them Mondays, I take them Tuesdays, you've got them Thursdays, I take them Fridays.
Yep, and since there's now a lot of online programs and availability of that, you know, the parents can just, you know, get a curriculum available, start utilizing it, and then just share it during the week. That way you've got at least, and with now the flexibility of most people are now working either 4 days a week or 5 days a week, if in most of that time now is at home, they now have the flexibility. They could take one of those days off and be able to, you know, take the kids one day, the next one, the next, so that you have an ability to reduce the cost substantially. Instead of that $800 a month per kid, you know, that maybe lowers to just a couple $100 a month if you include, you know, the workbooks and curriculum and some other things that are needed.
Do you think that the quality ratings are in some ways adding to the childcare desert problem?
Not necessarily, because if somebody's going to do it, they're going to do it and they're going to follow that criteria, but they're going to work to try to get the additional grants, and they're going to try to work to get the kids that are eligible, which then frees up these other childcare facilities to be able to just go ahead and charge more market rates. But I think in general, there's an issue because the cost to educate a person to become an early child care specialist, those costs coupled with the fact that if you do need a bachelor's degree or if you'll go on to get a master's, there's no way you can compete with the K-12 system, the traditional public system. And that's why most of those teachers end up going into early child care in maybe K-3. Versus doing the early child care.
The salaries are so different.
It is potentially 50% to 100% more per year, depending on where they go.
The whole argument with the Step Up to Quality and the star ratings really centers around, you know, kindergarten readiness to a certain extent, is making mm-hmm. sure that these children are prepared. Maybe they know their numbers, their letters, they know how to line up. Like, there's all these, like, tick boxes, right, that they check when your kid goes off to kindergarten. Mm-hmm. What do you make of that? Because we were having a really interesting conversation before we went on the air about it.
Well, I've had conversations with this, and yes, it's important that kids come in prepared, but in a way, kindergarten is there to try to figure out where the kids are. And if you put all the kids, which now, given technology and everything else, you could put almost every kid on an individualized education plan. Not that every kid needs an IEP, but because of personalized learning, if you know that a child coming in kindergarten doesn't know, you know, their basic numbers or colors or whatever, they can go ahead and put that kid on a plan that gets them caught up a little faster with a group of kids that may also need some help. Whereas the kids who are already starting to read in kindergarten, they can advance them faster. So by you know, putting them in a different plan. And I think that that is something that by the time that they're in third grade, we want all the kids to be reading at third grade level and be able to do math at a third grade level. And many of the studies that I've seen indicate that whether you've had early child care or not, those kids are caught up by third grade. So even if they've had those additional that additional help like Head Start and other things, it doesn't necessarily mean that by the time that they're beyond third grade that they're worse off. Now, it could be that the studies were flawed and the fact that those kids that would have advanced even more won't advance further because they're being drugged back by all the kids that are actually way behind. So I think that's something that I would like to see some further studies on, and maybe the Ohio State University can do that.
You know, one of the fascinating things about having this conversation is we just spoke with the Ohio Chamber of Commerce. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Steve Stivers, former Republican congressman, you're a Republican state senator. But it sounds like increasingly the business community is getting involved in having conversations about childcare and how to make it more accessible. Is that surprising at all to you?
No, because we've got a massively tight labor market. Now, if we went into recession, you might see the number of the labor increase, the labor pool increase. And if that happens, then you probably have a decline in the discussion of it. So I think that for your listeners, we're right now in a very tight labor market. The economy is relatively doing well. The inflation is a huge problem. But all else being equal, that's why the business community is wanting something to come in and help subsidize childcare.
Yeah, because it's all over the map. We were talking about earlier, Intel is mm-hmm. going to have an on-site child care facility. Ohio State has one. But, you know, mom and pop, smaller businesses, that's just not feasible for them.
You talk to the members of, like, the NFIB, National Federation of Independent Business, or any small business owner, you're right. I mean, they're doing what they can to try to cover their costs that have increased substantially over the last few years. And having extra money available to help, you know, pay for child care for somebody, they may not have that additional $800 laying around in their small business, and there's really no other place for it to come from. So, you know, to suggest that maybe government can come in and give the money, well, the money has to come from somewhere. And when the United States is going on about an increase of about $1 trillion every 100 days to the national debt, that's creating a huge inflation problem, which is causing, you know, that's why wages have gone up, but wages have gone up, real wages have not. They've actually been falling relative to the growth just due to the fact that inflation is just gobbling up the difference.
You know, I also have this theory, and I want to run it by you, that, you know, the child care crisis or the cost of child care also impacts businesses completely unaffected. So, you know, when I was paying $38,000, $40,000 a year for child care, like, I wasn't getting my hair cut. I wasn't getting, like, my nails done. We weren't going out to eat. Mm-hmm. Like, we had the money to cover our child care. But any kind of, like, spending that you would think for a family who is, you know, combined making a really solid income, like, well above median, you would think we would have money for vacations or home renovations or dinners out or date nights. But it was all going to child care. Does that make sense? So, like, all the other businesses get less because we're like, we're just going to eat at home.
Or you have a labor problem because there are fewer, the families are getting smaller, as we know. I mean, they've shrunk. And they've shrunk because the cost of the marginal cost of an additional child is so substantially more that you're seeing smaller families. You're seeing, you know, families or parents without kids. So that's been growing substantially in pretty much any of the first world countries. You're seeing that, and you're seeing that just because of those costs.
Yeah, we're having fewer kids, and when we do have them, we're having them much later in life.
Correct, and that way you've hopefully built up a career, you've paid some debt down, you're in a house, you're in a better position to be able to raise that child. But again, when you have the kid, and you know you have to go to say like a good school system or a school system that is perceived to be a lot better, such as a lot of the suburban districts. Those costs alone, those are substantially higher because of the property taxes there are substantially higher. And so that's almost like paying, you know, additional money for child care, early child care. So there's a lot of offsets there that have substantially increased the costs.
That was State Senator Andrew Brenner. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you for having me on.
And I want to say thanks to the All Sides staff, which includes senior producer Marcus Charleston, producer Aaron Esmont Rabinowitz, and we have one remaining spring intern left, David Stein. Thank you so much. And that'll do it for this hour of All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.